Blog Talk Radio.
No, blessed souls, the heavens are not coming down because that would turn the world upside down. Rather, the creation is smiling out to each and every nation's generation with a positive vibration. The question is, are we picking up on the positive vibration? Greeting and blessings. Blessings and greetings, blessed souls. We're alive because we tend to be configured towards Chaim and structures of life, towards Chesed, structures of kindness, towards Rachim, structures of mercies. You're now turned into Soul Talk as part of the Blog Talk Radio Broadcasting Network, and we humbly assert with a higher inner frequency. This is Soul Talk number 789, Proverbs, Teachings to Access Wisdom and Righteousness, presentation number 12. Blessed is our eternal creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha. Blessing upon the entire human family condition. Talking about 8 billion plus human beings. Creator's help. Our next broadcast is taking place right now on July 30th. And it's now 12:01 Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island equals AKA equals USA equals United Soul Actualization. A central topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. If you want to join to make the show a little bit more organic, the call-in number is 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And we're going to segue out of the opening song called, what is it called? I forgot. It's about us coming together. Achena, one day more. That's the Maccabees. So we're going to shut it off right now and get on with the shoe. And joining us after a long hiatus, basically because of my scheduling difficulties, is Rambam teacher, student, advocate, advocist, Dennis Ryan, live from the Big Apple. Well, the part of the Big Apple I know Dennis resides in is shining with brightness from a warm summer day. Good morning, Dennis.
Dobre utro. Hagdala. How are you, Don?
Thank God. Baruch Hashem. You know, Dennis, I want to say this kind of like, you know, I'm known for my sarcasm. The other day, someone came up to me and said, I can't believe it's the end of the summer. It's already July 28th. But you know, Dennis, I ride my bike basically every day to work, and Friday morning it was about 92 degrees. I said, well, come on my bike, ride for the next 5.5 miles, and you'll feel it was just like, it feels like just like the beginning of the summer. So everything has a certain context. I think someone once said, in the name of Einstein, that one hair on the head is not enough, but one hair in your soup is too many. So, Dennis, how can we educate people that they have to sort of like realign themselves and not just look at their own personal perceptions, but understand a broader context, the various situations they might find themselves in this blessed world?
I guess some people don't realize that they can be in many different situations in a relatively short period of time.
Yes.
And what happens is it depends on what you are prepared for. If you are not prepared for change on any scale, you're in for a big surprise. But change is always present in our life of mortals. We don't sit still on anything. The animals don't. The birds don't. The people don't. So we have a setting here where it's mobile, changing, and it can go positive and negative at any time. Are you prepared is the real question. So how can you prepare yourself? Well, you must review your principles and the reason why you are living today. You are here because you're part of a pilgrimage. That pilgrimage is set up by the maker of our world so that you can prove yourself and show that you're worthy of heaven.
Amen. I like that, Dennis. And I think if I heard you correctly, you would use the word pilgrimage. We are. We're all pilgrims in this world, not just the ones that came on the Mayflower or the Santa Maria or the Pinta, whatever. I think those are the names of the three ships.
We're all passing through.
Yeah, we're passing through, and we're adding to our life experiences, and hopefully if we are blessed enough to realize that we're not just here to celebrate and to experience our life experiences in a bubble, but to share it with others. So, you know, that's one of the things Lubavitcher Rebbe once talked about, but this is in the context of learning Torah, that a person should learn, because if they don't learn from experiences or, say, scripture, oral Torah tradition, or whatever traditions you're following, blessed souls, it's not an efficient use of the time. Dennis has been around here for more than 70 years. I've been around for more than 61 years. And still, we're students of life, I think, Dennis. Am I correct in giving us that title?
Absolutely, Don.
Okay. Well, we were expecting Rob Walker, our good dude from Brooklyn, but apparently he's been delayed. We might have another guest. We'll see if he comes on. So with that being said, excuse me, let me just get a sip of liquid. Hold on. I would like to open up a topic which we haven't really talked about. Oh, someone has just called in, and it may be our new co-host, Dennis. Hold on, please.
Hello?
Caller, 917, who is this, please?
This is our Rob Walker.
Rob, oh, our good dude, our cool dude from Brooklyn. We have Dennis Ron on the line, and it's a pleasure to hear your voice all the way down south of Jersey City, wherever you are. I'm not going to say where you are. You can identify where you are.
All is well. Good to hear your voice. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Excellent. So good to hear your voice. It's been a while, my brother. It's been a while.
So, Rob, you, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the program, but we started talking about how I was approached by someone the other day and said, wow, you know, it's the end of the summer. It's July 28th. I said, well, if you get on your bike, like I get on my bike every morning to ride to work, and Friday morning it was 92 degrees, it feels like the dead center of summer, even feels like the beginning of summer. And so sometimes people get locked up in their own self-perceptions of looking at a calendar. Well, it's time to feel this, it's time to feel that. But, Rob, for a person to grow, I'd like to get your views on how people have to sometimes reevaluate and look at things from a different context, not just from what their eyeballs see and what their ears hear.
Hmm. Okay, well, interesting. I think that, you know, most people set their, you know, their lives by schedules, by what they've been taught to perceive as a season, or taught to perceive, as a time of day or time of month. It's not like paying your bills, which is on a particular schedule, which you need to pay your rent or keep your lights or your gas on. You know, we are taught to think in terms of how we view things, but it's also a mechanism, in my view, many times as a mechanism of control. If you view, you know, July is summer and it's hot, so you must be doing this, or it's November and it's cold, so you must do that, you kind of forfeit some of the beauty in life. You have to kind of think outside the box. God gives us a mind to think, to be creative. There's a time for everything in the season, but you can go beyond that. You can expand your thinking. You can expand your viewpoint. And also trust that in any season that you're in, God can bless that season to make it feel like another season. You know, again, the summer of your life can be in December and the winter of your life can be in July. So it's important that we trust God and we, you know, we hear with our, kind of hear with our eyes and hear with our ears simultaneously, if that makes any sense, and give God a chance to work in us in a way that, you know, the schedule that man has produced doesn't distract us from what he's trying to show us.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rob. Dennis, you want to add anything to Rob's set, or we will move on?
Well, I just got to remind people, the clock is always ticking. And we don't give prizes to vegetables. So, you're getting older, and what are you going to do? Are you going to make a difference or not? Or are you going to relive the time you spent the last couple of years and you didn't accomplish anything?
Okay. So, gentlemen, I'd like to move on, and I think this will be a very stimulating conversation now, about two different types of prophecy. This is based on a teaching by Lubavitcher Rebbe, who gave it in 1955. So we're talking about, 68 years ago, and another teaching from his father-in-law, which would have been in 1939. So it's basically cutting and pasting two ideas from 1955 and 1939. And these two rabbis talk about two qualities of prophecy. The first one is called an instinctual prophecy. And that is that first evidence of instinctual prophecy was Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and God simply spoke to them because that's what was going on before the first mistake, or you want to call it a sin or a veira in Hebrew, and therefore the way Adam and Eve, as they were hewn from the ground, and Eve from the body of Adam, is that instinctually they were able to be in communion with Creator, and vice versa, how much more so Creator was in communion with them. So it was not like something they had to go through a process of refinement, but rather they were born into those environmental conditions. The next example was that the giving of the Torah, that the Israelites did make a certain preparation 50 days after getting out of Egypt. However, they got to the point where they actually were kind of discombobulated, because from the oral Torah tradition, they saw what is normally heard, and they heard what's usually seen. And it was kind of it's very hard for us to understand what was going on. Could imagine if you see a lightning bolt and hearing it, not the thunder that comes after, but hearing in Hebrew means to understand, and seeing means to perceive the profundity of it. The third example, which is really the days that we're preparing for right now, in the future era, prophecy will be instinctual because there is a prophecy from the prophet Joel or Yoel. It will be that afterwards I will pour out my spirit on all flesh, and your sons and daughter will prophesy. That this will be an instinctive form of prophecy enjoyed by all flesh, meaning all human beings, with requiring no preparations, because basically the groundwork was laid by making it a world which is a conduit for these type of revelations. Now, as opposed to an acquired prophecy, the Rambam talks about this. If anyone's interested, go to the Mishnah Torah and the Laws of Prophecy. And there are various ways of preparing oneself to become a prophet. One has to be wise. One has to not look at the follies of the world. One should have a very strong mind. There's many qualities. I'm not going to go into all of them. But yet the Rambam says a person can prepare for prophecy and will never get prophecy. So I'd like to turn first to Robert about how there are instances from the Torah itself where prophecy from the beginning of human beings to the giving of the Torah, which basically was like a new period in time until now, in the Messianic era, it's going to be the environment we live in which will be conducive to us naturally experience prophecy. And because we don't expect prophecy now, there's a lot of, unfortunately, doubting Sarahs or doubting Susies. But for those of us who are believers in Scripture, and Rob knows because we're learning in the Gate of Trust, that Rabbeinu Bechaya, who lived 1,000 years ago in España, which is known as Spain, said that learning the verses from Scripture gives you faith in the Almighty. Rob, I gave you a big serving of Torah, but I'm sure you can break it down, and then we'll turn to Dennis for his feedback.
Well, I mean, you gave me a lot, and I hope I can answer it the way I was hearing it in my head as you were so eloquently displaying it. There is a part, wait, where are my glasses, because I want to get this right, I don't want to mess it up. But in the book of Psalms, which I've been kind of sitting with lately, in addition to the Gate of Trust, but in Psalms 4, it says, "Stand in awe and not in sin, commune with your heart upon your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in God. And then another part of it, and I kind of skipped this, because this is Psalms 4, I'm sorry, I was reading from. Psalms 4:2 says, O ye sons of men, how long will you turn my glory into shame? How long will ye love vanity and seek after leasing? Selah. So when I read these scriptures, it makes me really understand the total and complete focus for all things has to be on God. I mean, we can write a dissertation about any of the points you mentioned about from Adam and Eve to Joel, but in the end, it comes in a deep-rooted trust of God. In the book, The Gate of Trust, it talks about how it's like going to a restaurant and someone serving you a great meal and you're giving compliments to the cook and you're giving compliments to the person who brought you the food, but the purveyor of all things, the giver of all things is God. God gave the meat to be cooked. God trained the chef to cook. God gave the waiter the understanding and the help to bring you the food. So in the end of it, we have to go back to a place where we understand that prophecy cannot come to anyone who is not aligned with God. You have to be in alignment. You have to be in obedience. You have to be in a place of seeking righteousness. Not that that we can attain it in this life. We do the best we can, but sacrificing all things, turning your back, denying yourself the things that the world is offering in order to, he said, I will pour out my spirit. But who is he pouring out his spirit on? Those who are seeking him. He's not going to pour his spirit on a person that seeks to do wickedness or pervert what he's given. It has to be, he's pouring out his spirit on something or someone that is going to do his will. It has to be his way. And so many times what we've done is that we've come to a place where we look at the things that we wanted in life, that we may have thought we should have gotten or didn't get or still seeking after. And we try to align what our thoughts are and what our wants are with what God's will is, and sometimes we miss the mark. And so we have to always turn back that place so if we're hoping to see what God is going to do, we're hoping to hear what God is going to do, we're hoping to understand what God is going to do, we must always have our mind and our attention turned to him, which in the midst of all distractions, or the midst of all the temptations which Adam and Eve faced in the garden, or man faces every single day, it becomes more difficult because we are being, introduced to things that seem fun, seem fair, seem amazing, but if we know God, those things are really foolishness in comparison to a relationship with him and the true prophecy as to what's to come that's going to save our souls. Our mortal bodies are not here to stay. They're only here for a temporary point in time, and so we have to be thinking about the eternal. Our conversations have to be about things in heaven. Not that we forsake our daily duties and our tasks and our jobs and our, whatever it might be, but knowing where you want to spend eternity and what your mission is while you're in this temporary state. So, I mean, that's as best as I can possibly, conceive what you said. And lastly, it's important that we teach our kids Torah and share information with them, because we're now in a place where a generation is taking most of their cues from technology, from TikTok, from Instagram, from Facebook. And I recently took a break from social media. It's been almost a month now, about 3 weeks I haven't been on. And why? Because I said to myself, I need to get back into reading full time. I need to get back into the book full time. And I didn't want any distractions or any interpretations that would distract me from what God is trying. I needed to be in a quiet place. Sit upon your bed, be quiet, be still, and let him talk to you. Read the word, meditate on the word, be still. He says, meditate on my word day and night. There's a reason why. If you do it day and night, it leaves very little room for distraction. That's what I have to say.
Okay. Dennis, for those of us who are readers of the Bible, believing in the Bible, we've seen situations where people were able to just instinctually be able to prophesize, because you see, when they're talking to God and God's talking to you, and Moses writes it down, it's not a conversation like we're having today. It is a conversation between the one who spoke in the world and came into being, and for those he brought into being, meaning these original human beings, and then eventually at Mount Sinai, and eventually looking forward to with pining eyes and longing souls and desirous hearts, the fact that the Spirit of the Almighty should be poured on all flesh. So what can we do to try to educate people that there's a historical precedence of an environment which makes it relevant that without making preparations, prophecy can come? At the same time, too, there are those who have arisen throughout the generations from every nation, including the Israelites, who have become prophets or social visionaries, to improve the family, human family condition. So your take on these matters.
Well, what we have here is a time continuum, and that is when you're born, you're on the clock. Once you're on the clock, it never stops unless you end up in the cemetery. So you have something to look forward to, and we all know that people are going to have to learn because we don't start off with a lot of knowledge, but most mortals are curious and would like to know, what is the future there? Is it for us? Is it for our history? If you don't know the history, can you have any idea what's in store for you tomorrow? Can you invent things that weren't done in the past? Or are you bound to repeat all the mistakes that people have already made? Now, nobody wants to say you're going to repeat the mistakes, but if
right.
you don't stop and learn and try to understand, you may have to be in that same situation of those people that have to go back and relearn and relearn and relearn. Some people just don't understand after a period of time, and they don't look inward to say, maybe there's something wrong with me. However, we do not sit around on our hands and feet waiting for God to do something. God is waiting for us to see what we are going to do. So you have all the opportunity to pick out some good things that you want to do. You also have the opportunity to pick out some bad things. It's your choice. You have been given free will since you were born. You have to use it. If you don't use it, are you flushing it in the river, in an ocean, in a toilet? You must use those things that were given to you so that when you are born, you can learn what the future is about. So the biggest thing about learning for the future is to understand what holy people have written in the past. They wrote it so that people, us, in the future could benefit by their understanding of time and all the other good things on our planet. If you ignore that, are you going to invent new things? How can you invent new things if you haven't conquered the old, or at least understand the old? The choice is yours. You must say, what pilgrimage are you going to be on? One that's looking at the clock and saying, I can't stand around and do nothing because I have to show what I can do while I'm here.
Beautiful. Okay, yes, go ahead, Dennis. Go ahead, Robert.
No, I was thinking about something that Maimonides, you know, the Rambam had said, and this is something that's used in you know, in our secular society. I mean, it's a little bit off point for a second, but it says, you know, you give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, but you teach a man the fish and you feed him for a lifetime. It's the teaching that has really confused and confounded our society. You know, like what Dennis is saying, it's like, you know, God is, you know, we're not waiting on God. God is waiting on us to do. He's given us all the faculties and the tools to work with. And sometimes we're confused because we're so animate about looking for what we consider to be a miracle that some of it needs to be our participation, not to an extent where we do God's job because we cannot do that, but to the extent where God says, well, you've gone as far as you can, I will step in. There was something else he said. It says, and he said something along the lines. He says, teach your tongue to say, I don't know, and you shall progress. This is what the Rambam said. And I thought that was one of the most profound things I'd heard based on what I'd read thus far. And it's like the fact that you don't know and you seek counsel, wise counsel, and then as you learn, God says, okay, this man is ready to represent me because he's done his work. Now he's prepared. He can, because remember, if you're representing God, he wants to make sure that you're not going to misrepresent him by jumping out and saying something. You say, I'm prophesying, but how can you prophesy without a conversation from God? How can you know? how can you know anything without God's, you know, endowment and you know, and the interpretation being given to him to give to the world correctly? Remember in the book of Jeremiah that when those said, you know, thus saith the Lord, if the Lord didn't say that, they were put to death. You don't say thus saith the Lord and the Lord didn't say it. You know, it's false prophecy. So we live in a time where especially in many churches, this is what's coming out of the churches. You know, God said you should have a house, and if you claim that you can have a car, you can have lots of money, and that's not what God has said, and that's not what we should be teaching. So it's strong teaching and true teaching that's going to lead us in the right direction and allow prophecy to be fulfilled in a way that is correct.
Okay, beautiful. I'd like to share a teaching kind of like piggybacking off of what both Robert and Dennis said, Dennis and Robert, about despite differences. So there are people who will listen with keen interest to what we just said, and others will be indifferent because they struggle with the whole idea of prophecy. But what about something that Dennis mentioned too about, you know, certain people who are righteous and holy? And the Baal Shem Tov, and again, I made a video about this last night, and I put it on TikTok, and I put it on Facebook, and a lot of people seem to like it. The Baal Shem Tov, who was the modern patriarch of the Hasidic movement, because I just want to remind everyone, historically speaking, there have always been pious people who walked the face of the earth. And a pious person in the Hebrew is called a chassid, or a chassida, for a female righteous person. So the Baal Shem Tov mentioned this. In every generation, there is a tzaddik, a righteous person, but some people don't have so many good acts, you know, from the perspective of their thought, speech, and action process. But they actually they connect to this righteous soul who's in a righteous body. While others, who do many good actions, and speak very good words and think very good thoughts, they don't want to connect. They don't even believe in this that there could be such a righteous person. And the Baal Shem Tov wanted to say that the reason why this is that the souls today are a byproduct of Gilgulim, which are known as reincarnation. We know in the law of conservation of energy, which is one of the first laws, is that energy is not created or destroyed, but merely takes new forms. It can assume any sort of dimension. So the energy of a plant can be subsumed into the energy of an animal, which can be subsumed into the energy of a human being. And therefore, the human is really some part plant, some part animal, actually some part inanimate matter, because where did the plant grow? It grew from the earth. So if a person, the soul of their soul is refined, that person is given the merit of adhering to the teachings of the righteous soul in the holy body. If not, if he's lacking in that type of faith, because there is a certain faith, because we see by the splitting of the Red Sea, the verses mentioned in the book of Exodus, that the Israelites believed in God and Moses. Not that Moses was a god, but they believed that he was truly the prophet of God. And sometimes people don't even know of the righteous soul in the holy body. We therefore know and believe in the tzaddik, Baal Shem Tov said, in the righteous soul and the righteous in the holy body. But this is the part that really gets me, brothers, is that we are not superior because we are connected to such holy people. Because we're not superior at all to those who don't know and even believe. Again, as the Israelites believed in Moses and the Almighty, and Moses is called the servant of God. And maybe people might even oppose righteous souls in holy bodies because these people are actually doing more good than we are, those who adhere and follow the teachings of the righteous. So it's not proper to separate ourselves from them. Rather, we should all be together in unity. Dennis, is unity the catalyst for breaking down the difference between people, or do you have any other suggestions what we can do to try to bring more people together?
Well, you brought up the complexity of the human situation, and that is, even though we all have different opinions, can we believe in the same objective? Can we agree on what is bad and what is good? Can we agree on how we're going to proceed tomorrow, the day after, and the day after? Now, what we do, we have to shake our reasoning out, because we cannot accept the whole wide range of everything. We're humans. We're not perfect. we must pick out a couple of things that we know we can follow, believe, and bear fruit with. That we pick out ideas that are good to us and we believe we can improve them. If we can't improve them, why are we even talking about them? We cannot sit on good ideas. We cannot ignore people who are trying to tell you the truth, and even in prophecy. If someone said, oh, the sun is going to come up tomorrow, that doesn't mean the person is a prophet. Person who's worrying about tomorrow says, how are you going to do something that's improved tomorrow that you didn't do today? Now, what they're doing is they're trying to wake you up or give you a warning that you have time to improve and change and adjust. But you can't do that if you don't have an open mind and try to understand what brings us together, what we have in common, and what flag are we walking under? What flag are we following? We know there are false flags and there's good flags. But we have to accept that we are not perfect. But you should be able to pick out the good points of those ideas of what elderly people or historical people have pointed out. As warning points, don't step on these landmines in the future. Now they're trying to help us. But if you ignore what they said, do you want to make believe you're inventing it all over? There are some people that think, well, I don't need to listen to any of that. Why? Because I'm perfect. And if you're perfect, can we expect perfection all the time? Or is this a one-time deal? Anyhow, we have people who have talked about perfection, being great, doing positive things. But they also tell us, watch out where you put your foot because you could be stepping on a landmine. They didn't know about you when they said this, but they knew there were future humans that gonna need some type of help or direction. So if you don't pay attention to those people that pointed out what is good, what is righteous, and tried to bring us all together for the future, then you're part of the disruptive influence that is against any type of unity because you think you have a better opinion of things. You must examine what we all have in common because that's what we depend on.
Beautiful, Dennis. So I'd like to close out this section by going back to, again, the prophecies of Joel, but preceding that with a teaching from the it's called Tana Deve Eliyahu Rabba, the teachings from the house of Elijah, and the prophet Elijah declared, I call heaven and earth to bear witness. Again, this is a prophetic teaching, blessed souls. Jew or children of Noah, otherwise known as Gentiles, man or woman, slave or handmaid, if his or her deeds are worthy, the divine spirit will rest upon him or her. That's called Ruach HaKodesh in the Hebrew literature. So again, this is the acquired type. It's not divine. I mean, there are various distinctions we're going to go into now between divine inspiration and prophecy. But the point is, if a person has Ruach HaKodesh, divine spirit, they're holding in a good place. The next thing is a prophecy in Isaiah in chapter 40, verse 5, and the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all flesh will see it together. Isaiah 40, verse 5, the term all flesh comes to include all the peoples of the world. As the Talmud of Jerusalem states, when one hears the divine name blasphemed, heaven forbid, by an Israelite or someone who is of the nations, one must tear his or her garments. Which verse proves this? As it says in Jeremiah 32, verse 27, I am God, the Lord of all flesh. The last prophecy, which we mentioned before, and we're going to end up this section here before we go on to Proverbs, is in Joel chapter 3, verse 1, and afterward I shall pour forth my spirit upon all flesh, and all your sons and daughters will prophesy. See, there's no advantage to being a man over a woman here. Your sons and daughters, men and women, will prophesy. Your elders will dream dreams. Your youth will see visions. And in the commentary it says, I shall pour forth my spirit. This refers to the spirit of wisdom and the apprehension of godliness upon all flesh. But then all nations will discern and know the Creator. And going on with a little bit more from the Midrash called Vayikra Rabba, although eternal life may be attained even in the present state of reality, it will primarily characterize the future when spiritual knowledge will increase. That time everyone will know Creator, and through this knowledge everyone will be incorporated into the divine oneness. Then all creatures will live forever like the Creator. For knowing Creator, everyone will be incorporated into Creator, as the wise man once remarked, if in the famous book called Khazari, which was written about 1,000 years ago, that if I knew him, I would be him. This spiritual knowledge will be in the future, as indicated by the verse in Isaiah chapter 11, verse 9, the earth will be filled full of the knowledge of Creator. Because of this knowledge, nothing will be lacking. Thus the Midrash states, if you possess knowledge, what do you lack? And if you lack knowledge, what do you possess? Everything will be completely good. So Dennis, how can we advocate to others getting knowledge of oneself, getting knowledge of the creation? We certainly advocate people going to the spiritual teachings or whatever faith they follow, but here we're in the context of learning Torah. How can we advocate and hopefully empower another person to realize the more knowledge, the more they feel their life is in fulfillment and in sync with the Creator, combined with a lot of prayer, a lot of good thoughts, a lot of good speech, and a lot of good actions?
Well, strange as it may seem, Don, you've said the word that really means a lot. It means a lot to me, and a lot of people don't use it, and that is the word worthy. Are you worthy? Do you think you're worthy? How can you be more worthier than someone else? We must look in the mirror. We look at ourselves. We can see the human image. But what does that represent, that image in the mirror? Is it worthy, unworthy, not worthy enough? Where do you stand on that scale? Do you know how you measure what is worthy, what is unworthy? People to do a little introspection. But this is what keeps us going, that we actually say, am I doing enough? Am I happy at just the pleasures, or am I interested in the goodness? Do people know the difference between pleasure and goodness? Where does worthy stand? We cannot make believe that these standards that are using to judge people by their actions are not being used enough. Everybody declares they are right. They're not wrong. But are they worthy? Are you worthy to go to heaven, or are you worthy to go to hell? That is not a good idea in the negative. The positive is the most important thing. And each person has to create their own little scale of judgment. And that is enough worthy to go around for everybody. But if we don't strive for it, we're in an evil world and we don't know what decisions to make. So be worthy. Try it. It works.
Robert, your take on these matters.
He pretty much summed it up. I think that, again, as I stated before, you know, who can judge who? You know, who is worthy of judging the next person? Who understands more than the next person? Who has God endowed this person with more knowledge and understanding than the other person to be the person that can speak to all people? The Rebbe was a person that his voice resounded even today because God endowed him with a level of spiritual knowledge, not just worldly intelligence, you know, book knowledge, you know, from the academia world, but just in his spiritual walk and his spiritual understanding, he was able to teach and talk and guide many people. So I do believe that God obviously handpicks those and appoints those who he will have speak to a nation as he did with Moses and other people, you know. And so, but we are all given that power by God. We can't endow ourselves with anything, you know what I'm saying? We can't think ourselves wise. You know, let the man who thinks he is wise think himself to be a fool, because you think that you're wise without understanding that God gives you all of these attributes, then you're making a fool of yourself. There was a quote by, I think his name was Ernest Renan. He's from France. He said, "Man makes holy whatever he believes, as he makes beautiful whatever he loves." And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, people can claim to be something that they're not because they have a huge following. If you go on social media, he said, "Well, how many followers do you have?" You know, I mean, so that dictates how popular you are, and that dictates how right you are or how great you are. But does it really? You know, I mean, we live in an age where people are following pretty much. I mean, this is not new stuff. You know, we think because we're going through it, this is all new. It's new to us because we're living in this particular time. But there have always been slick oil salesmen. There have always been things that have distracted people. You know, people followed the wicked people. People followed people who did things that were completely contrary to what God said. And so we live in a world that is kind of just repeating, you know, we're kind of repeating the behavior. And the other day I said, what is our purpose here? You know, why are we all here? You know, are we here to be worthy? You know, are we here? Why are we really even here? Like, why did God decide I'm going to make man and woman in my image? You know, why? Why? So I thought the other day, I said, well, there were two times that I've read in the Bible where God actually walked on earth. One was in the Garden of Eden when he approached Adam. And the other time when the Tower of Babel Babel was being built, and they were building, he said, let us go down and see what they're doing and intervene. I'm trying to remember if I read anywhere else where he was actually walked on the earth. And so are we preparing the earth to make the earth holy again, this place holy, so God can have access to it again, because it is not operating in a holy fashion as it stands? How can there be so much division but be godliness? How can there be so many churches and synagogues but be so much division? How can there be division in the synagogue and God be present? How can there be division in the church and God be present? So it to me, it stands to reason that maybe nobody's worthy, and we're all striving to find a place of peace where God can say, well, you've done your best, and only God knows if you've done your best. Only he knows, because he knows what he gave you to work with. You know, some people have been given a lot and they do nothing with it. Some people have been given a little bit and they make much of it. You know, that's why he says, you know, if you have as faith as big as a mustard seed, just a mustard seed. So he's not asking you to have a bolder amount of faith or of contribution. He just wants you to know where your heart is. And I think that's how he determines if there is such a thing as worthy. He determines based on where your heart is. Sometimes you can do things that are completely contrary to where your heart is because of your circumstance. A man will steal to eat. Doesn't make him a career criminal or a real thief, but he's hungry. So that was his last, you know. And suppose he was a man who had a good job and had a good career and was fired and his life turned upside down. Is he a bad person because now he has to steal bread or steal a bottle of water to eat and he becomes a criminal? You know, he's not a man who's been sluggard or lazy his whole life. So, if you know, these things, we have to be careful that we don't stamp our human depiction or definition on people and circumstances and decide this is what God is saying. You know, don't adorn yourself in garments of holy garments and then know that you're making decisions that are completely contrary to what the Torah says or the Bible says or the Rambam has said or whatever it might be, because you're in a position of power, but you know you're disadvantaging many, many people and you're misleading people, because everything that you say will be brought into account. God is going to bring you into account for every single word you've ever spoke, every thought you've ever had. So be careful that, as Dennis said, about being worthy. If you want to consider yourself or become worthy, you begin to dilute and dump all of those hateful, negative, judgmental, unforgiving emotions and feelings, and pick up as much positive, beautiful things. Because as you said a moment ago, suppose we are the spirit of a reincarnated tree or a plant or a bug. We don't really know what God, how God has done it. We read what we've read, and we discern what we discern, but we really don't know. We're using our best possible judgment to make these decisions. So I don't want to take any more of your time, but that's kind of how I look at it.
No. That's why you're on the show, to take up time and to give you new points. I'd like to now go to Proverbs, and last time we were together, wow, it's like 4 or 5 months ago, but we left off to try to work out what we can derive from chapter 1, verse 24, but I think we need to get a little jump start, because we have to understand, remember we talked about context before, blessed souls. So King Solomon at this point of chapter 1 in Proverbs, and I'm going to read, let's see, 3 verses, and then we'll get to the 4th verse, and we'll start to get into the elucidations. So basically, the context of wisdom shout in the street, in the square she gives forth her voice, that's verse 20 from chapter 1, verse 21. She calls out at the head of the noisy streets. She utters her words at the entrance of the gates of the city. Chapter 1, verse 22. How long will you naive ones love naivety? I'm not pronouncing the word correctly, but I think everyone knows, extraction, elongation of the word naive. And the scoffers covered scoffing, and the fools ate knowledge. Verse 23, you shall repent because of my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. We talked about before the prophetical spirit. There is the spirit of rebuke. I will let you know my words. So now we're going to go on to chapter 1, verse 24, and elucidate, and we'll turn to Dennis and Rob, and then Rob and Dennis, about what King Solomon is trying to convey as they understand it, and to bring out nuances that perhaps we didn't perceive before. So chapter 1, verse 24 is, since I called you and you refused, I stretch out my hand and no one listened. So the Mitzudah David, one of the classical commentators, said that the Almighty is telling us through the prophetical teaching of King Solomon, you refuse to hearken what I called for. And Rashi mentions, again, another primary elucidator of the oral Torah tradition, to beckon you to turn to me, like a man who beckons to his friend with his hand stretching out his hand for him to turn to him. So Meiri, this is where I want to get into the heart of the discussion now, Dennis and Robert and Dennis. So Meiri, another classical commenter, says, the outstretched hand represents wisdom's willingness to accept all. He also suggests that the outstretched hand may denote chastisement for their sins. But I want to stress this idea, blessed souls, that, somehow Robert got disconnected? I don't know how that happened. Robert, can you hear me? You have to call back into the program. And also, Dennis, you both have to call back into the program. Dennis,
I was put on hold. Robert,
yeah, that's strange. I must have hit the wrong button. Please forgive me. So I have now. So Rob, you'll have to call back in. 563-999-3688. 563-999-3688. I'm just going to leave him a message here, so he'll get it. I'm sorry about that, Rob. And I'll just tell him to call back. And that's why it's live radio, because Rob is back in, I think. Let me just pull him in. Rob?
Yes, I'm back.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That was my goof. I don't know if you gentlemen heard what I said. That, again, in this words of rebuke here, there's hope, because the Mary says that wisdom of the Creator is willing to accept all. And I just want to mention that in the context of what we said at the beginning of this presentation, wisdom shout out in the street. So it's mentioned in the plural, wisdoms with an S, not wisdom, meaning there's wisdom for the 5-year-old, there's wisdom for the 10-year-old, there's wisdom for the 15-year-old, there's wisdom for the 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80-year-old. So wisdoms are always, from the Almighty, are always constantly being transmitted into creation, but it's like a person calling out a friend, and the friend's not willing to reach out, so the friend is reaching out to him to try to help him get to a situation. So, Robert, I'd like you to sort of like, how can we educate people that the Almighty's wisdom will accept every person, no matter what their past is? And this kind of goes back to what you mentioned before, who are we to judge?
Right. We have to get to a point where we realize that, you know, as Dennis said, the minute we're born, the minute we're conceived, the clock is ticking. So we didn't know the moment we were conceived. Our mother didn't know the moment we were conceived. Only God knew that, right? And so there's a part in Ecclesiastes where he says nobody knows how the spirit gets into the bones of the belly of the flesh of the woman when something, I forgot it, I'm paraphrasing, but basically God placed our spirit in the bones of that baby, well, you know, that fetus or that sperm, whatever it was that during that time, and it grew from there. And then he says, I knew you when you were in your mother's womb, and I basically, he had a conversation with us in the womb before our mother even knew we were there. So God is very strategic. He placed us there. He had a conversation with us. We were given assignments during that time, although we may not remember the exact conversation. If you look at the things that you like or the things that you're focused on, that's an indication as to what God is leading you toward, the positive things. We must also respect one another, get to a place where we respect, you know, everyone's understanding and where they are in their walk. Remember a time when you were 17 or 25 or 28 or 30, and you knew about God, you knew about certain things, but you weren't as animated, you weren't as excited. You were just kind of living your life, doing your thing, having fun, you know, running around, having a great time. And then you got to a point where you began to take it more seriously. So, you know, we judge people as, oh, you young people, but you were young once also. You have to remember where you were and where your wisdom was and where your understanding was, and did you ask for it during that time, and did you know how to ask for it, and if you did ask for it, did you know what it was when it was given to you, and then did you utilize it correctly when you got it? And so if we're less judgmental, as Dennis was saying, we come to a place where we begin to unravel some of the truths in a person's life, and it will also teach us something about, you know, something we may have forgotten about being young, but sometimes we're so far removed from it that we judge it in a way that is completely wrong because we forgot that we used to do some of the same things, maybe slightly different. It doesn't make a difference if you're Jew or Gentile or whatever, you agnostic or whatever you believe in. There are certain things that young people just do. There are certain things that being young just allows you to think. Even though if you are raised in a very strict culture, you're still going to have some exposure to it. You have to walk the streets. You have to be in a restaurant. You have to go to a McDonald's. You have to go to a park. You're going to hear profane language. You're going to see certain things. So there's no complete possible way of blocking the truth about what's going on in the world. No matter how you try to, you can teach it, you can try to skew it, you can try to give your own definition of it, but people have to grow up and kids become adults, and then whatever you didn't give to them, they're going to learn on their own, and maybe they learn it right or learn it wrong. So the best that you can do is just be as open to hearing what people have to say, and also watching what they do. Because sometimes, again, it's like you learn from just observing. The job of a police officer is not to stop crime. The job of a police officer is to observe so maybe he can prevent a crime. You know, like you go to the doctor. You don't want to go to the doctor when you get sick just because you get sick. You want to go for a checkup so you can see if something is coming along that doesn't seem right, they can prevent it from going further. So we have to come to a place where we love and respect each other. And I think, you know, you say wisdom's crying out in the street. It means it's available for all, and it's obvious that it's there. But if you're distracted and you're focusing on only on what you want and not what God has obviously putting you to do, because sometimes he has made it obvious, but you say, oh, that's not really what I want to do, God. I want to be a radio show host, so I want to be an artist, I want to paint pictures. He's like, yeah, but why don't you go over here and do this, and then when you go there, you'll meet a person that'll allow you to use those other skills that I gave you, but this is the primary thing that's going to help sell those things. But you're so focused on this particular thing that you've forsaken your power because you didn't really investigate it from the perspective of God's perspective. And so, one, you have to listen. Two, you have to love. Three, you have to forgive. Four, you have to be patient. Five, long-suffering. And six, be charitable. Just give, give, give. The purpose of your very life is to give something back. That's the only reason I think we're born, is to take what God has given to us, be fruitful and multiply. Like Dennis said, we don't know anything. We're trying to figure it out. So a lot of it is us thinking we have all the answers. But what are all the answers? What are answers? Who created the questions for the answers? So we say, I read 70 books, and I know everything. No, you know a lot about those 70 books, but there are 5 million books. So you haven't begun to study. But what if you were able to sit in a room with elders or whatever, people that have had these experiences and read all of the 5 million books, and you could just sit and listen? How wonderful would that be? And suppose they're not Jewish. Suppose they're not Christian. Suppose they're not whatever they are. Suppose they're just men who have information. Because remember, God can use anything to teach us. He uses the wind to teach us. He uses the sun to tell us when to plant, when to sow, when to go to bed, when to wake up. He uses the elements to teach us. Is the sun Jewish? Is the sun Christian? Are the trees religious? Is the soil religious? Come on. Do the bees who pollinate the flowers that we eat our fruits from, do they care? You know, but they obey God because they like you said about instinct and prophecy. They know what they have to do, and they don't question it. But man, with his stubborn mind and his stiff neck, has more intellect in a sense than that bee, but does completely opposite of what its assignment is most of the time. Whereas everything in nature obeys God because it knows its job. And we, even when we are given prophecy or we're given insight into our job, we go another direction because we want to do what we want to do. And that is why we need salvation. That is why we need to repent. That's why we need to fast and supplication, because with all that we've been given, we waste it. Like Dennis was saying, we don't have enough. We don't know the time we have, but we still waste it, fighting over stuff that's not ours, fighting with each other, calling each other out. You know, like, look how many years you and I have known each other, and we haven't had an unkind word. It doesn't mean that we can't agree to disagree on some things and different ideologies, right, but we love each other. Imagine if the whole world operated that way. So we can agree to disagree, but as Dennis said, we're all moving in one direction. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Rob.
Dennis, your take on these matters.
I just want to sort of reduce a lot of this down to one thing. God's love is everywhere. You have to figure, are you an observer or a participant? If you're an observer, then you say God's love has no effect on you. If you're a participant, you have to choose how you're going to fit in, because you cannot ignore it. God's love is everywhere. It encompasses everything. Whether you're bad or good, God's love remains the same.
Beautiful. Gentlemen, believe it or not, in reuniting the first time, I guess, in about 4 months plus, we've come to the end of the program, and I think it went very well. I was worried about being rusty, but I think the only way to remove any vestiges of the rust is to keep on doing the program. So hopefully I'll reach out to both of you next week to see if you're both available, and we'll try to continue in this vein and exploring the teachings of King Solomon. And just to remind everyone that wherever you are in this world, in the Western Hemisphere, the Eastern Hemisphere, in the Caribbean, in Asia, in Russia, where we have so many people listening all around the world, that the streams of divine wisdom are constantly flowing into the creation. Just a matter of, do you want to make a vessel to receive these levels? Now, I can't receive what Dennis can receive, and Dennis can't receive what Rob can receive, and I can't receive what Rob receives. We all get our particular flow, and hopefully we're going to grow with the flow or go with the flow. So I want to again thank Dennis Ryan and Robert, and Robert and Dennis Ryan for joining us today. And with that, we're going to segue out of today's program with an a cappella, meaning the only music you're going to hear is from the mouths of the Maccabees. We're going to do a version of Matasiah's One Day, because that one day is going to be such a day where, again, we won't see hatred, jealousy, and competition. Instead, we'll see Ahava Chad, one love, Goral Chad, one destiny, Kulano for all of us, but dark and dark, show them in a pleasant, peaceful way. Everyone have a wonderful week, and hopefully to be continued. Take care, everyone. Thank you.